Ah me, son of valiant Peleus, said the messenger to Achilles in book 18 of the Iliad, you must hear from me the ghastly message of a thing I wish never had happened. Patroclus has fallen, and now they are fighting over his body, which is naked. Hector of the shining helm has taken his armor. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. As we began discussing courage in this year's Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, we turned our attention to Achilles, the paragon of courage for the Greeks. In book 18 of the Iliad, Achilles, who up to this point has refused to help the nearly defeated Greeks, mourns the loss of his friend Patroclus and resolves to rejoin the battle with the Trojans. And he does so knowing that his death in battle is absolutely certain once he avenges Patroclus' death by killing the Trojan commander Hector. Dr. Glenn Arbery, president of Wyoming Catholic College, explains how Achilles' decision and the shield and armor that are designed for him gives us a picture of courage that becomes the baseline for all other depictions of this virtue. Dr. Arbery, tell us about Achilles. Who was he? What was his background, and how does he fit into the Iliad and into the history of gods and men?
Gracious, what a question. Achilles is the son of a mortal man named Peleus and a sea goddess named Thetis. His particular prominence in the Iliad is due to this parentage, oddly. It doesn't seem as though there's anything particularly distinguished about this parentage, since he's not the son of one of the Olympian gods, for example, like Heracles, or in the Roman usage it would be Hercules, who is the son of Zeus himself and a mortal woman. But Achilles has a special prominence because there was a story that didn't come to Zeus and Poseidon until it was almost too late, and that is what was that Thetis, this sea goddess, bore a particular destiny, which was that she would give birth to a son who was greater than his father. Now, at the time that this prophecy came out, both Zeus and Poseidon were contending for Thetis, and when they discovered that she was going to give birth to a son greater than they were, they saw the threat to the whole Olympian order. Because in previous generations of the gods, Zeus had overthrown his father, Cronos, since he was more powerful, had a greater weapon, the thunderbolt. Cronos had overthrown his father, Uranus. So with each of these overthrows came a shift in the whole cosmic order that could have come about had Zeus or Poseidon become the father of this son of Thetis. So the gods in council decided that they would marry Thetis to a mortal. And that's what led to the marriage of Peleus, this mortal man, to Thetis. Now, the idea there is that the destiny that would have threatened the Olympians is sort of, you know, grounded out into the mortal world. All of that force and threat is taken down into the mortal sphere where the main actors will die, and that will be that. You know, it won't lead to this massive overthrow. But the problem is that once Zeus and the others have done this, they owe something to Thetis, since she's accepted this marriage with a mortal. And they also owe something to the son of Thetis, who is Achilles. If you think about it in the right perspective, you see that Achilles is the figure whose mortality, whose coming death, guarantees, in a sense, the safety of the Olympian order. So that all the Olympian gods owe to Achilles the fact of the mortality of Achilles, the very continued existence of their reign in the heavens. So that's why Achilles has such a spectacularly central place in the greatest of all Greek poems, the Iliad.
Isn't the Iliad really the story of Achilles? It's much more than the story of the Trojan War.
It's both. And the way that you can think about it is both, is that in a real sense, the Trojan War exists in order to give sufficient honor to Achilles. In other words, the very fact that there is a war among mortals is in a sense a reference to the war that didn't take place among the immortals, which would have overthrown their whole order. So the Trojan War is the sufficient context to give this this mortal hero the kind of framework and the kind of fame that would you know, give him everlasting glory, which is the prophecy that he has. He has the two choices, the famous choices of a short life with everlasting glory or a long life without particular distinction. And so clearly the life of everlasting glory is the one that we're seeing in the Iliad.
Now, since his armor was stripped from Patroclus, Achilles' mother goes to the great smith, the divine smith, and asks for new armor. And we have the description of Achilles, not armor so much, but the shield specifically, depicting all of human life. As I think I said to you, it's either a really, really big shield or all the details are very small. Tell us about the shield and about what's going on with the shield.
Yeah, well, first of all, as you say, Achilles has lost his previous armor. And you find out earlier in Book 18, where the description of the great shield is, that this armor had been given to Achilles' father Peleus on the day of his wedding. So the old armor, in a sense, signifies the, you know, the fact of the wedding, the fact of his mother's marrying a mortal, and in a way, the mortality of Achilles, since it's associated with his mortal father. This new armor is signifying something else. This is made specifically for him after he has explicitly chosen the short life, because he knows that he'll die soon after he kills Hector. So this armor is indicative of a new splendor, but it's also interesting in that it's not really going to protect him. So this great shield that Hephaestus makes is covered with scenes from every dimension of human life, taking a case to court, for example, weddings, a battle around a city. There's farming going on it. There are herdsmen, there are dancers. You know, it's the whole array of what is good in human life that you can see throughout the Iliad, often in the similes that Homer uses to describe various things that are going on, sometimes in the very middle of a battle. But it's this other, more or less peaceful, beautiful world of things that are good about being human that are significant on this shield, because this is what Achilles carries. This is the order that he bears with him, even though he knows and we know that he won't live to see the fulfillment of this kind of splendor of mortal life. So it's a beautiful image, you know, that he's carrying into battle when he goes back to face Hector, but then to accept his own death.
Now, Achilles is the strongest, the scariest, the most skilled of all the heroes, Greek or Trojan. He's got the best armor, he's got the best horses, and he knows that until Hector is dead, he's immortal, at least that long. Well, how is that an example of courage, or is it?
I'm not sure that in itself is an example of courage. It's sort of like being Superman until further notice, right? You're quite right. I mean, he's, in a sense, has free rein until Hector's dead, and then he knows that his death is following that. That's part of the splendor of the Iliad, to my mind, though. It's not so much an example of courage as it is of the emotional abyss into which Achilles falls. If he has to die, in other words, he's going to take as many people with him as he can. You know, that's not an admirable emotion, but it's certainly a human one, and that's what Homer is depicting, is the kind of terrible wrath and the terrible urge to destruction that you see a hero like this indulging. Books 19 through 22 of the Iliad are all about Achilles. He goes into battle for the first time since the beginning of the poem, and everybody else on the battlefield, at least on his side, the Achaean side, virtually disappears. I don't think you even hear anybody else referenced. And that's because when Achilles is on the battlefield, there's nothing else to see. Trojans flee from him. He kills so many of them that he dams up the river with their bodies. I mean, it's just one thing after another. It's brutal. There are scenes in there of his killing someone who has come to beg as a suppliant to spare his life. But Achilles is so beyond the pale at this point that he listens to him and says, "Why should I spare you if I have to die? You know, I am the son of, you know, the goddess Thetis and Peleus, and I too have my day of destiny. Why should I spare you?" So it's as though if he has to die, then anyone who comes before him, he's going to be the one to kill. So I think that's what makes the ending of the poem so beautiful, that you see somebody come back from this abyss into the human order and accept his mortality on a better level and have a kind of reconciliation with his lot and the lot of all of us, for that matter.
In your lecture at the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, you seemed to say that, while you didn't use the word, that all this, the wrath and death of Achilles, were sort of redemptive in some way. Is that correct? And if so, how?
I think that's correct, and I don't want to confuse it, obviously, with Christian redemption.
Sure.
But it's as though if Achilles is this figure who could have been, had his father been different, the supreme figure in the whole universe, and you see someone aware of that loss, that deprivation, as he clearly is from things that he says in the poem, when you see him have to accept the fact of a short life, you know, just the brevity and the limitation that he's been given as his lot, that's in fact the lot of all of us as mortals. And so when Achilles accepts it and takes it on, there's a way in which all of us, thinking here of, you know, all readers of the poem, but especially all Greeks, obviously, before the Christian revelation, are taken into the destiny of Achilles as participants in it. That is, the glory that he gains is a glory for man himself, which is new, because it had always been in previous generations, you could say in the previous order of things, it had been stories of the gods that were told, not stories about man. So man takes on this new height and dignity that is newly beautiful and newly dignified, and largely because of the figure who comes to represent us all, which is Achilles.
Whether it's been a long while or whether you've never read the Iliad, let me recommend that you take a look at Book 18 in your dusty old copy or with an online PDF. It just may make you want to jump right to Book 1 to take in the scope and the glory of this great epic. And if you've been enjoying these After Dinner Scholar podcasts and believe in the kind of liberal arts education we're providing at Wyoming Catholic College, will you consider making a financial gift to the college during this, the final week of our fiscal year? It would be a great help and encouragement. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.